National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Imagine sailing to the Caribbean on a gorgeous cruise ship, seeing the sunsets, and deepening your Catholic faith at the same time. This week on Register Radio, we talk to EWTN's famous Teresa Tomeo, who tells us how that is really happening on the Good News Cruise. And then, Professor Santiago Schnell, a Venezuelan scientist and provost of Dartmouth College, is raising eyebrows across the academic world. Register Senior Editor Jonathan Liedl tells us why. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News and host of Register Radio, joined as always by my co-host, Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. How are you?
Very good, Matthew.
So this weekend, a remarkable cruise set sail with several thousand Catholics celebrating the faith, deepening their commitment to the sacrament of marriage, and spending time together in prayer and, I'm sure, a lot of fun. I'm referring to the Good News Cruise, part of a wider phenomenon of Catholic travel, cruises, and pilgrimages. One of the key figures of the Good News Cruise is Teresa Tomeo, someone very well known, of course, to the EWTN audience as a radio host extraordinaire, author, and expert in all things Italian and Italy. Teresa, welcome.
Thanks for having me. This is so exciting.
It really is. First, in sort of full transparency, I'm privileged to say I'm one of the speakers on the Good News Cruise. This will be my first time. But you are a veteran of these types of Catholic cruises, Catholic travel, Catholic pilgrimages. What is it about this modern era that is sort of driving Catholics to undertake these journeys beyond even just pilgrimages?
I think it is, and there's so much research coming out about this. It's a great question, Matthew. I don't know if you had a chance to look over Bishop Michael Burbidge's recent pastoral letter on the mental health crisis in our country. He talks about the desire for community, the need for community, that we've lost that, and that people are really searching for it. And I think deep down, that's what's going on. Obviously, the attraction of wonderful speakers such as yourself, and we also have, believe it or not, Andrea Bocelli joining us on this cruise, which is amazing. And it's a great lineup of EWTN presenters as well and other speakers from around the country. But I really think it is a desire for people to come together and have fellowship. And it's growing, especially since COVID. The very first cruise, and I've been on all of them, this is our sixth cruise. This is the first full Catholic charter, but this is our sixth Good News Cruise. And we actually started right before COVID in 2020. Literally, when we landed after the cruise at Detroit Metropolitan Airport, people were on the bus starting to talk about what they were hearing about other ships, you know, shutting down and things like that. And so we were at the beginning of this back in 2020. And it just has continued to grow. Thanks be to God, we came out of COVID and we still had a cruise the following year. But it's desire, I think, to be together and to be together as a family of Catholics. And it's just an incredible experience.
Yeah, we're in the middle of an epically cold winter. So Matthew's description at the top of the show, my reaction was, sign me up. But guess what? You can't, because it's booked years in advance. So can you tell us, both of you, really, what is the focus of the Good News Cruise?
Go ahead, Teresa.
Well, the focus is really the good news of Jesus Christ and the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith, and it really is an encouragement cruise. It's very interesting, having done, as Matthew said, pilgrimages as long as I've done and started my first pilgrimage over 20 years ago. Sometimes we think that when we bring people together for events like this, whether it's a cruise, whether it's a pilgrimage, whether it's an EWTN conference in Birmingham or one of our locations, we think that everybody that's coming is all in, is all on board, and is a really strong Catholic. And what I've learned is that definitely is not the case. People are all over the map, and that's fine where they are in their faith. And we see amazing things happen. But the theme is really focused on the good news of Christ in marriage on this particular cruise, but also really helping people to re-embrace their Catholic faith in a deeper way. But the other thing I like about this, as Matthew said, there's a great deal of balance. Our faith is all about moderation and balance. It never swings one way or the other. The church is always right there in moderation. And there's a lot of fun on this cruise. I mean, I love to dance, and I will be out on that dance floor as often as possible. My husband will not, but that is one of the things.
I'm with like Dom on that, just for the record.
Yeah, I'm out there dancing with whomever, but it's a lot of fun. And we have some very special events, great talks, but we also have some really fun events. I'm doing a tea with tea. So I'm having a ladies' tea and I'm getting all dressed up with the fascinator and the lace gloves. It is about enjoying life. This is a life that God gave us. God is the creator of everything, of music, of art, of food, of family. And we have to enjoy it. And I don't think enough of us do. And it's good to be able to let your hair down, of course. I'm not talking about dancing on the tables with a lampshade over your head, but I am talking about having a good time. And we combine everything on this cruise.
And one of the things that jumped out at me when I first started hearing about the Good News Cruise, I know that you and the late and profoundly missed Al Cresta were two of the real pioneers in sort of launching the idea of cruises, is the idea of taking something that so many people do and adding into it, of taking it and really making it a Catholic event. So right. I would reluctantly use the term sanctifying it, but in a way of helping people to take what is an often mundane, highly enjoyable event, but really deepening our Catholic faith in doing it, which proves, as always, that the Catholic Church, there's something there in everything we do that is good, that is enjoyable, that can also lead us to something deeper. And in this case, it's, as you say, it's the good news of Jesus Christ. It is the gospel, but it is also, in this particular cruise, focusing on marriage and family life.
Right, yeah, and our longtime partner in Catholic Radio, John Hale from Corporate Travel, whom you know is bringing you on the cruise this year, Matthew.
Yeah.
Years ago, he came up with this idea of the Good News Cruise because he saw, as someone who leads, he has a huge chunk of his business, is Catholic, obviously, but he also does a lot of secular events, including a lot of theme cruises. He was noticing, well, how come they can have a country cruise or a disco cruise or a cooking cruise? Why can't we have a Catholic cruise? And then he also saw some things that were not really nice in terms of, this is a Catholic radio show, so I won't say what they were promoting on some of these cruises. Not that he was involved in that, but he understood that there were some other cruises out there that were not really wholesome at all in any way, shape, or form. He says, no, he says, we can do this and we can do it really well. And he had a dream of making this a charter. So this is the first fully chartered Catholic cruise, where it's our ship is the whole ship. Previously, we would be on large Royal Caribbean ships, and we'd say we'd have probably about a quarter of the ship, and we would intermingle with the other passengers, which was a great way to witness. But now we have the entire ship, and I think that's going to make a difference because we have more control over the venues, which is really nice. I just think it's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, just to get a plug in for the Register, so our February 22nd print issue is a special report on Catholic cruises. So as Matthew mentioned, this is really part of a trend within a trend, the bigger trend of Catholic pilgrimages. So we have a number of stories about people who love doing this. I've been on your cruise and others, and also a story about priests who are recruited to be on just normal cruises as Catholic chaplain and what that experience is like. So it's a really interesting package of stories. But I wanted to ask you, what is it about a cruise that is different from a conference, for example? Why is this a better way, or why is this a much different way to kind of share your faith and deepen your knowledge of the faith?
Well, I think for one thing, it's longer. If you have a conference, many conferences or retreats may last for a day or 2 days, maybe even three. But there aren't too many conferences or congresses that last for an entire week. And so you have a whole week, 7 days and seven nights of people coming together to hear great talks, to have fellowship, to eat great food, to meet other people, you know, with a like-minded approach to life and to faith. So that's one thing. And I also think there is something, and maybe this is because I'm a water baby. I was born on the East Coast, raised in Michigan. My father was an engineer on the SS United States, talked about the water his whole life, never got over leaving that ship, and he just loved the water. And I think when you're out there on the sea, it gives you such an appreciation for the magnitude of God and his creation. Mm-hmm. That is a big part of it. I mean, you go out there and you stand on the deck or on your balcony and you look out and you see the ocean and you can't see anything but water. And it just gives you this idea that this God who created all this loved us so much that he came to us in a child, and he comes to us every time in Mass, body, blood, soul, and divinity. And it really makes you stop and slow down and think about that. So I think it's a combination of the beauty, but I also think it's a combination of being together in one place for a whole week.
Yeah, as a complete ship taken over by Catholics, which I'm really looking forward to seeing what that looks like, knowing that as I'm just wandering the halls going up to the Lido deck, that in fact, everyone on board is there for a very specific reason, and that is to be part of what is a very Catholic event. And it, Shannon, I think to your point, too, about the difference between an event like this and a conference is not just the time, but also that this is a cruise that's very deliberate in trying to deepen the faith of people in a way that conferences can't, even under the best of circumstances, because we're all together essentially on a week-long retreat, given the number of speakers, given the options for confession, for spiritual guidance, mass every day, and then to have also the number of priests that we do, the number of bishops that we do. So who are some of the prelates, for example, who are on this cruise this time?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's the rock stars. We have Archbishop Aquila. We have a personal friend of mine who's a wonderful bishop from Gary, Indiana, and that's Bishop McClory. And we have Bishop Coffey. Oh, let's see. We have Father Leopold Linghong. We have Father Mike Schmitz. Only he's only going to be with us for a day, but he'll still be presenting. We have Father John Ricardo. I think I mentioned Father Leo. We have Father Pavanka from Steubenville. So it's an incredible lineup. We have Father Frankie Cicero, who's a wonderful dynamic priest who's done several pilgrimages with me and Dom. It's an incredible lineup. I'm so excited about it. And I think it's nice, too, because we get to see these church leaders, these princes of the church in a different setting, that they're real, that they're human, and that they're approachable. That's another reason I love this so much, is because they get to mingle with the priests and the bishops and the archbishops.
Now, we'll have to see if any of them end up on the dance floor with you, but that's...
Oh, well, wait a minute now. Bishop Coffey. Bishop Coffey is my dance partner. Can I tell you a quick funny story? This is really funny. So, one of the cruises, John Hale and his brother-in-law, David DeFranco, who are the co-owners of Corporate Travel, they were in their cabin kind of making some notes and getting ready to go down to meet someone for an event in the evening. And, you know, they play all these videos on the in-house cruise video, right? And so they're watching this video, and David DeFranco says, oh, he says, wow, look, they're showing the disco night. Look at that. And John said, no, that's just one of those things they have on the loop. And David says, well, why do I see T and Bishop Coffey doing the YMCA dance on the video? So,
understood.
Yeah, so it's Bishop Coffey gets out there. He loves to dance. And, it's just a lot of fun. A lot of good, healthy, faithful fun.
But to your point, Shannon, an event with a deeper meaning and part of a wider phenomenon that I know that from a news standpoint, we really want to keep an eye on, because we're looking at trends, but we're looking at how we can impact culture.
Absolutely, yeah. If you sneak on board and you're not Catholic, it sounds like you're going to be Catholic when you get off. I'm just saying.
A very, very good point.
Well, what's interesting is we have a lot of couples, and one of our good friends, they're actually two non-denominational Christians who've been long friends of ours. This is their third cruise. They keep coming back. I think they're gonna come back into the church, so we'll see.
Yeah, take the hint, right? Well, Teresa, great as always, and I know that the cruise is a huge, immense success. Next year's going to be just as big, if not bigger. I know that you have Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who's going to be one of the key people on board. So thank you for that, and God bless you.
Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Register Senior Editor Jonathan Liedl about Dartmouth Santiago Schnell. If you don't know who he is, you want to get to know him. This is Register Radio here on EWTN Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen here, as always, with Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Well, our Register Senior Editor, Jonathan Liedl, has a very important and fascinating profile of what's described as an Ivy League provost, as the title of his piece says, trying to bring higher ed back to, and in parentheses, its Catholic roots. This is an individual that I think we all want to get to know, in part because he is somebody who is really trying to, as the title of this piece says, get back to education in what it was meant to be. I'm talking about Santiago Schnell, who is a world-renowned mathematical biologist, who, as dean of the College of Science, has played a leading role in forming the next generation of Catholic scientists while pursuing fruitful collaboration with theologians and philosophers across the campus. And in his role as the provost of Dartmouth, can really bring some changes that are probably badly needed to the Ivy League. So, Jonathan, welcome back to Register Radio.
Great to be with you guys.
And so what brought Santiago Schnell onto your radar?
Well, what first brought him to my radar was that he was leaving the University of Notre Dame, where, as you mentioned, he was, you know, the dean of the College of Science. He's a devoted Catholic scientist. You'd think that's kind of a dream job, but what really caught my attention is that, he said, you know, my role here is very important, but I have an opportunity to go to an Ivy League school and really be part of the national conversation on what higher ed is supposed to look like. Of course, we know in recent years, higher ed has been in crisis. It's been more known for activism than academics and ideology than the pursuit of truth. So Professor Schnell just wanted to respond to that, and go to Dartmouth, not for, you know, a boost in prestige or anything like that, but really for the purpose of saving American higher ed. So I just thought that was fascinating that there's a Catholic scholar, right, who is following his vocation and mission by, in this instance, not staying at a Catholic university, but by going to the Ivy League.
Jonathan, he's such a remarkable and fascinating person. I found the interview just wonderful. But, you know, the one thing I keep coming back to is to listen to him talk about truth with a capital T and the search for truth, to talk about God and his Catholic faith. How did he wind up at Dartmouth?
It seems almost inconceivable today, doesn't it?
Well, you're right. I mean, and a little bit of it from my perspective, I when I was going there, I'm like, okay, I know he's Catholic. He's a serious Catholic. How much is he going to talk about in the interview? Like, you know, is his office going to have any Catholic stuff? And then we start talking. He's the one bringing up the Catholic roots of the university. He's the one who wants to talk about the Catholic vision of higher ed. And his office is absolutely covered, right, in devotional things and images of Mary everywhere. He prays the prayer of Thomas Aquinas every day before he starts work. He has a pectoral cross that Pope Francis had, the Good Shepherd Cross, that he keeps by his desk to remind him of his vocation as provost of helping steward, you know, the academic mission of the university. And for inspiration, he's reading St. John Henry Newman and John Henry Newman's letters on, you know, when he founded a Catholic university in Dublin in the 1850s. So he's very, you know, he's not trying to hide his Catholicism in any way. And you're right, it was very surprising to me. And I think it speaks to probably the vision of the president of Dartmouth, that's C.N. Bylock, who came over to Dartmouth to lead the whole university just in the past few years from the University of Chicago. And the University of Chicago, I think, has had a longstanding reputation, you know, maybe compared to some of the Ivies and other elite universities, for really saying, like, hey, we're here to, like, discuss ideas. We're not here for safe spaces. We're not here for activism. Although certainly, you know, things like that have happened at UChicago. But I think President Bylock really brought that vision of let's get back to the, you know, the basics with higher education. Let's have professors who teach students how to think, not just tell them what to think. And she looked around and I think really sees in Santiago Schnell, you know, of course, he's an extremely accomplished scientist, but he's really a humanist, if I can say that. I mean, it's incredible. Like, you know, I talked to him for an hour and we didn't, mathematical biology hardly came up at all. He was busy talking about history and philosophy and literature and all these kinds of things. So just someone who I think is very impressive in terms, you know, if you're talking about higher ed pursuing the truth, pursuing beauty and pursuing friendship, you know, he's kind of like a walking billboard for it. The way he approaches his scholarly work and the academic life is very much as a vocation pursuing those things. And I think it was really kind of just evident, you know, in our conversation, probably what President Bylock saw in him when she invited him to come to Dartmouth.
Right. But in some ways, not to belabor the point, that runs contrary to almost everything that you see today in certainly the Ivy League. and in quite a few universities across the country. So what was the reaction like first to his appointment, and then as he has come in and has been saying things that under different settings might actually get you canceled?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting point. You know, when he first came in, what I've heard is maybe there was some questioning in the comm boxes of alumni forums. Who is this guy? He's from Notre Dame. Is he religious? But really what I've heard in terms of what's playing out in Hanover is that, you know, he's just very good at his job. He's a very good academic administrator. He's an exceptional scholar. And so I think he has credibility because of that. I brought up this phenomenon of cancel culture, which, of course, has been a reality, you know, in many, many places, many other Ivy League and elite institutions. And in his view, he says it's kind of overstated, right? The kind of dangers of it. He says that if you're really good at what you do, people respect you, even if you have a different viewpoint, even if you contribute something different. You know, he cited an article that Robbie George at Princeton had just written in a publication, kind of making the same argument. Now, I think thinking about it is kind of interesting because, you know, he can say this because he is like top of the field globally in mathematical biology, right? So I guess if you get to the very highest levels of your field, you might say something like, you know, people will respect you no matter what your sort of faith views are. But I think, the message he gave to me really to share with others, because I asked him for his advice to young Catholics who might be thinking about going into academia, is to be not afraid. He described it as an extremely noble vocation. You're kind of helping to unveil and reveal the mystery of creation through your work. And also you're playing an important role in influencing and informing, you know, the next generation of leaders. And this is a really interesting point that wasn't fleshed out fully in the article, but he made this fascinating point that Catholics in the United States, historically, because we've mostly been immigrants, I mean, obviously we, you know, stayed for a while, et cetera, but waves of immigrants who tend to focus on getting a job that pays the bills, right? So, you know, focusing on the professions, being a good doctor, being a good lawyer, being a good engineer. But he said, and he encouraged for more Catholics to pursue those roles of influence, right? Those roles where you're really shaping the discourse, the intellectual life, and American culture. And he's doing it at Dartmouth, and, you know, so far, no cancel culture cries or anything like that.
They haven't been marching on his office, in other words.
No, I didn't see the pitchforks or the torches when I was there. So,
yeah, well, you can see the appeal. I mean, if you were a serious academic, you could see how infectious his enthusiasm would be in your work. And as he said in your piece, he's really there to make sure everybody flourishes, the students, but also the faculty as well. So we wish him good luck.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think even though he's not at Notre Dame anymore, he's still very engaged in the specific question of Catholic higher ed. And he made some really interesting comments in our conversation about the problem with Catholic universities right now is they're playing what he calls the rankings game. They're sort of judging their own performance by these external metrics, of rankings, like, you know, U.S. News College rankings. And he said a lot of the metrics, that the criteria that go into that, aren't even academic, and they're certainly not often consistent even with Catholic social teaching, the vision of a Catholic university. And so he really encouraged Catholic universities to not focus so much on the affirmation of those, you know, outside of the university, but to really focus on doing what they do distinctly, exceptionally well. And he had this beautiful image. He said the mission of a Catholic university should be to cultivate the future doctors of the church, which I know, Matthew, that's kind of your specialty, doctors of the church. So I don't know, maybe you and him can partner and put together a new Catholic, you know, Catholic doctor university or something. Well, not medical doctors, of course, but those brilliant intellects who have helped really unpack and apply the church's teaching in an ever-changing world.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, it's very clear that Newman, our 38th and newest doctor of the church has clearly influenced him. But I appreciated especially his comments on Catholic universities. And he's coming from Notre Dame, which itself has this longstanding reputation, but as we've been reporting at the Register, some fairly recent dubious appointments. So the concern of Catholic identity is certainly going to be remaining, isn't it, Jonathan?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would expect Professor Schnell to continue to be a very important voice in that conversation. Even, you know, he's at Dartmouth, he's at an Ivy League school, so certainly in American higher ed in general. But I think even from that vantage point, you know, his words will matter in terms of when we think about reforming Catholic higher ed going forward, right? So definitely someone to keep an eye on, I think.
Yeah, very quickly, Jonathan, what are you working on?
Right now, well, we've got Catholic education. We just had Catholic Schools Week. And so looking forward, it could be a big year for Catholic schools. So just taking a look at what opportunities to advance school choice there are on the federal level and the state level. There have been a lot of wins, so to speak, in recent years. So talking to some advocates in that arena, they really see 2026 as a chance to build on that momentum. So not the higher ed, but more, elementary, middle, and high school education. But, right. Education is very important to us Catholics.
It is. Well, Jonathan, thanks as always for your work.
Thanks so much, guys.
Well, that's it for Register Radio for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks again. On behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care and God bless.